This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week, our show is on break, so in place of a normal episode, some of our regular guests recorded conversations about the series they're reading and the things that interest them in comics. Our show will be back to our regular episode format on July 20th. Just a heads up, this episode contains full spoilers for The Valiant by Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent, and Paulo Rivera.
This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Nick White. And this week, it's a sort of different podcast. It's just me and the one and only Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Hey, Kate. I'm glad to have you here. I'm even more glad that I got your name right, or I've convinced myself I got your name right.
No, and you got it.
Wrong, okay. What a relief. I feel like the majority of me doing podcasts is me mispronouncing names, except for Joshua Hale Fielkoffs, who is now forever burned into my brain. This week, like I said, it's a little bit different. We have one less person, and we have a much more focused topic. This week, we are going to be discussing a book, not unlike our G.I. Joe versus Transformers episode. If you haven't listened to that one, it's a fantastic one, and I'm not just saying that because I'm featured prominently on it. Paul is also on it, and for those listeners who know Paul, that should come as no surprise. So that being said, this week I assigned Kate the reading of The Valiant from none other than Valiant. They got real innovative in the naming department. This is a mini-series that they put out. It was first announced in July of 2014. It started at the very end of the year and ran for four issues into the beginning of 2015. I told Kate that this was a sort of good introductory point for the Valiant universe. At least it was in my opinion. I think they have other ideas about that.
I'm just going to throw out there, though, Nick, that you also said this about some books before.
Right.
That I also had already read. So you said that about the Archer and Armstrong books. And so I've read the first three volumes of Archer and Armstrong and the Faith miniseries and trying to remember something else that I've read from Valiant. So it was kind of...
Divinity.
There you go. Divinity. So it was kind of not my first exposure, but sort of to some of the characters it was.
Exactly. So it's full disclosure, this is not the first thing of Valiant that Kate has read, but she's still coming in with enough, you know... just such a small amount of Valiant that I felt that this was a good entry point to the series.
It was more of an entry to the team stuff.
Like, yeah.
The team doesn't show up in Archer and Armstrong, really, and then they show up in Divinity but aren't explained or introduced at all, so it's just people. And you're just like, who? What? And that's really where Divinity lost me, is the point where they show up and I'm like, no, I don't know who any of these people are. So was a good intro
when Unity
in that
shows
sense.
Up in like the third issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me go over a little bit of background information here for those interested. This, of course, is based in the Valiant universe, or the Valiantverse, as I call it, which was rebooted in 2012. For those who want more information about Valiant, there's a lot out there, and I've probably talked about all of it on the podcast in the past. So what's a good sum up of the Valiant? I guess really it sort of starts with this whole idea of the Eternal Warrior, which the Eternal Warrior is this guy who has been protected or entrusted with protecting the Earth for, well, I think at least 10,000 years at this point. And that involves having to protect this person called the Geomancer. And the Geomancer has, you know, Earth-based abilities. It's not unlike Captain Planet, I guess you would say. And he's basically the Geomancer's bodyguard. I was going to say his or her bodyguard, because the Geomancer can be either. And when the Geomancer is killed by this thing called the Immortal Enemy, it ushers in an Age of Darkness. And more or less, this book starts with the premise that there's a new Geomancer, and he more or less has been entrusted with protecting this one, again, from more or less his failures of the past. Which I think was a really good starting point, and I think that's something we can sort of start on, is that the Eternal Warrior sort of gets painted at the beginning of this book, and I guess I should mention this as well. This is written by Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent, and drawn by Paulo Rivera with his dad, which is super freaking awesome. His dad actually does his inks. What an interesting relationship. But, right, so we have the Eternal Warrior. He's got this job, and I love how at the beginning of this book, he's sort of painted as a bit of a loser. He's not that good at his job. Yeah, I mean, am I wrong?
He's functionally just supposed to be the bodyguard for the Geomancer, and he keeps getting them killed. Just like, you're really bad at this.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
The instant equivalency that came to mind for me is having read a bunch of Swamp Thing. I'm like, okay, Geomancer's basically Avatar of the Green. This big baddie is basically Avatar of the Rot. And Avatar of the Rot keeps winning.
Yeah, no, it really comes across like a sort of Swamp Thing. Avatar of the Rot and Avatar of the Green, you're absolutely right. The only thing they're missing is sort of Avatar of the Red.
But, right, but like Eternal Warrior kind of steps in as being like the... there's definitely not that tri-way struggle. It's the two-way, but he's basically just the bodyguard for the Avatar of the Green. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And they keep dying, so you're not good at it.
Right. And I think what's fascinating is at the beginning, you sort of have this idea that maybe the immortal enemy isn't that bad. You know, he says entropy and decay are the laws that cannot be broken. Mm-hmm. So is this guy sort of evil, or is he sort of just providing a balancing act? And you see him time after time killing all these different geomancers. I think we start with one in what looks like maybe like the Mayan or Incan era. Mm-hmm. And then we have the one that looks like it's Greece, and then the Viking one. Mm-hmm. And time and time again, you know, the Eternal Warrior or Gilead Anipata is like, well, you know, this time's going to be different, guys.
Yep, I got it this time. No, you don't.
And then the immortal enemy shows up and just, you know, kills him. I think it's really fascinating with that as well, that the immortal enemy shows up in these different forms, which sort of take a cultural fear of sorts. Like, you've got the bull in Greece, which for me at least always kind of struck me as being sort of Minotaur-esque in a way. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Grendel in the Viking era. And I thought that was kind of interesting, how the little kid goes, you know, this is just, you know, based on the tales of the Grendel, it's not real, except this thing is taking sort of the mythology of these different cultures and like manifesting it in a way.
Well, right. They go to pretty great lengths to go over and over about how his main power is psychological and he takes the shape of your biggest fear, which of course would be culturally based.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's this interesting prologue and we see him screw up time and time again. And I really like how it also kind of gives you a context for why the Eternal Warrior has had these scars on his face. If you've read any, I mean, I know you haven't, but for someone who's read Eternal Warrior or any of that in the past, he's always had these three different scars running across his face. And everyone's like, well, what's that about? And each scar is for each one of his respective, you know, failures, which leads to that really, really interesting sort of like, it's sort of kind of the opening credits page of the book where it's that it's just him like right center. And then there's these three long, asymmetrical panels, that are sort of shaped along the lines of the scars on his face, showing like the three eras of darkness. Because mm-hmm. That's the whole idea, is that once the Geomancer is killed, it sends Earth spiraling into an era of darkness.
Well, not even Earth. It sends humanity into an era of darkness.
Yeah.
So like the Middle Ages and stuff. So I'm just envisioning, you know, 2016 Eternal Warrior, self-employed, and the bad guy shows up and it's the shape of an IRS auditor.
Oh, yeah, no! Exactly. Yeah. That's what is our greatest fear? I think Mark Zuckerberg is already here, so I'm not that worried about like maybe it's already shown up. But yeah, that's sort of the prologue and it sets the scene. And I guess for me, what I really like is right after that, you have Kay, the new Geomancer, who basically says, wait, what's the deal? Like, this Geomancer thing, you're telling me I'm something I've never heard of before. Like, I don't really understand most of this. Like, what's the deal? And I love that she sort of becomes the perspective for the reader, you know, in terms of like what is all of this about and like how does all of this work. And so I guess my first big question for you is like how approachable was that like introduction? Was it kind of an info dump? Did they throw a lot at you? Or
so to be, this is not even close to what you're asking, but I got super annoyed with her intro because they clearly did not do their research for terminology for her job. Being a PR person myself, she's like, I'm a publicist, and then talks about doing brand PR. I'm like, that's not being a publicist. Publicist is exclusively doing it for like an individual, like celebrity type person. Like, and even those people shy away from that term now. But whatever, nitpicky thing. But the whole few panels, she's going on about how she's a liar for a profession. I'm like, hey, that's not what we do. But whatever, you lose your license so quick. The easiest way to end your career. But anyway, that was minor beef.
I was going to say,
she was okay. She definitely came across as kind of a damsel in distress, which is not my favorite type of comic ever. But later on, she kind of comes into her own a tiny bit, only, well, she comes into her own for like a panel and then gets killed. And we're like, yeah. What? So she's like, no, okay, I don't need a white knight. I'm going to fight this myself. It doesn't go well.
Right. And I mean, that's a whole other thing, which I think is maybe a little bit problematic in terms of automatically offing the female character. But to be fair, in terms of gender equality of Geomancer's killed, it is 50-50 within this book.
Well, for Geomancers, but the book itself is still a massive sausage fest. There's side characters you kind of see. But, like, if you're going just by people who have lines and the number of lines, like, it's almost all dudes. There's, like, the one live wire person who has, like, two panels of lines. And then there's, like, one, the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. people, but they're not Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's Valiant, whatever you call them.
You mean the lady in charge of Gate?
Yeah, that. Thank you. And she has a couple lines, but otherwise it's almost all these guys. And I'm like, okay. I mean, that's not just Valiant that does that.
It's almost just strictly Bloodshot, K, and Eternal Warrior for the most part. I mean,
well,
pretty much everyone beyond them is largely bit parts anyway.
Yeah, that's more or less true, I guess. The director of Gate, the guy, or he's Neville? MI6. What's
MI6?
He has quite a bit trying to problem solve and coordinate.
Right.
And Ninjak talks quite a lot.
Yeah. Ninjak has a bit of a supporting role.
So, I mean, there's, like, proportionally, there's a lot more guys, which is standard for a lot of comic books, but if you've ever heard me talk about what I've read this week, you know that those aren't the books that I read, so it kind of sets my teeth on edge when I come across that stuff, so, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
As far as intro to characters, it definitely was a much, much better jumping on point than any of the other stuff I've read with the team folks, as in it gave actual little bits of backstory for characters. Like, it kind of explained who Bloodshot was or slash is, although it explains his powers, and then almost within like, well, four issues, because it's a four issue thing, depowers him. And I'm like, okay, now that I understand the nanites, they're gone. And really, the way I don't know if I'm the only one who does this, but basically there's certain archetypes that seem to cross all the publishers, and they all have their version of this character, right? So I always kind of come like, okay, Ninjak is the Batman of Valiant, and Bloodshot is the Wolverine of Valiant, and you know, so on and so forth. And you kind of make these equivalencies in your head and keep going. And They definitely didn't do that with everyone, but for the ones that I had kind of the holes in my knowledge for, they did, and that, so it worked out well.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, you're definitely not wrong, and I think, you know, making those equivalencies definitely makes it easier to keep track of everybody. Yeah. But I really think the Bloodshot introduction was done really well. In the notes, they even talk about how right off the bat, when you see that first action sequence, which is, I think, almost immediately after the prologue of the book, you have him trying to recover that package in the forest. And I really love how, like, right off the bat, like, if you have any doubt about his powers, like, he gets shot in the eye in, like, panel number two. And you're just like, whoa, like, what's his deal? And he just keeps going as if, you know, he just shakes it off. And they wrote that was sort of their really effective way of more or less showing and not telling, like, this guy is totally capable of pretty much handling anything. And I love how in, like, literally two pages you get maybe 25 issues of, like, Bloodshot history in terms of, like, what can he do? How can he do it? Who did he used to work for?
Yeah, except, can I say, coming at it as someone who's never read these characters before other than Archer and Armstrong, which, to be fair, Archer and Armstrong are basically bit parts in this, right? They're not a big thing.
Oh, they're very bit parts. Yeah.
And so for all the other characters, like having not read all their exploits, you kind of have this demonstrative, okay, these are what their powers are. But then they all come off as being super weak because you've never seen them like succeeding and being like doing well with their powers. So they all just seem like they kind of suck at it. And so it was hard to get that feeling of, oh, this is the biggest, baddest baddie. And you're just really like, man, everyone in this verse is really weak for heroes. Like, they can all banded together. They're still getting slaughtered.
Right. Yeah. And
it's like,
and
if your first exposure to Justice League was just watching them each get killed off by the same bad guy, and you'd be like, they kind of suck.
Yeah. These guys are kind of
right. Exactly. And so I feel like that was maybe not the best intro to characters in that sense. Like, it's good getting to know their backgrounds because they do a good job narratively of telling, like, this is what they do and this is their fighting style, and, you know, showing it and kind of stuff. But then they, in the sense that if you're wanting to see them as like powerful heroes, this is not the way to go.
Yeah. And I think that is one of those interesting things where if you are a Valiant reader, you come into this and you see them getting their ass beat and you go, well, wow, like, I know this character. Mm-hmm. I know this character. Like, this enemy must be, like, really, really,
exactly.
really powerful.
And you don't get that if
and
you're not
experienced. And if you aren't,
yeah.
Then you're like, do these guys win anything? Right? Ever? Like,
this is really just a scare beast that, like, gets in your head and psychs you out. It doesn't seem that bad.
I mean, other than, like, you see, like, Bloodshot's opening sequence where you basically see him, you know, having arms torn off and he, like, smashes into that mech thing and kills the pilot and everything. Mm-hmm. That was pretty great. And I think I really love how they accentuate a lot of the body horror around Bloodshot.
Yeah.
Like, when the Immortal Enemy basically takes his head and spins it 180 degrees.
Nasty.
And then Bloodshot's like, well, let's just correct that, mm-hmm. you know, puts his head back into position. But overall, I guess, were there any segments or parts that you had any really big questions about? Did you find a lot of the mentions and parts where there were large amounts of characters, did that make you want to learn more about those people, or did it just overwhelm you?
There was a goat with laser eyes that I need to have in my life.
The goat? Yeah, okay. Yeah, the goat is actually Quantum and Woody's dad.
What?
He got his consciousness got beamed into the goat.
And then their That's biggest their fear is that he gets embiggened and starts eating them. It's like, what?
Yeah, that's the goat. No, the goat, everybody sees the goat. Everybody wants to know, like, what's the deal with that goat? Yeah. Yeah, that's a Quantum and Woody thing.
Backtracking just slightly with the Bloodshot stuff, and they're, like, showing him doing all these crazy things and, like, getting all messed up, and she's like, there's something different about you. You're not quite human. I'm like, of course, he's drawn as, like, gray. Like, of course, like,
yeah.
Something seems off. I'm using my superpowers. I'm like, no, that's just your vision. Your normal human eyeball is going, this dude is the wrong color.
Right, yeah. He is a white knight. He literally is. He's as white as they come.
Yep. But yeah, like, I thought being a recent Faith fan, I jumped on the bandwagon with all the other people into the miniseries recently. I liked her bits, and those were good little, I don't think you'd call them Easter eggs, but good little nuggets, like when it turns into her parents and she's like, ah, yeah. So it's always the parents, isn't
yeah.
it? Good heroes can't have parents.
So it's always parents for one of the characters, at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody has to have both of their parents die. It's
how
much
it works.
Canon. I really liked that page, that splash page of everybody's, like, biggest and deepest fears. Because,
yeah.
Like, for me, for someone who has read a lot of Valiant, the amount of effort and research, like, you could tell that even though Jeff Lemire had not written any Valiant before this point, and Matt Kent, I think, had only been writing Unity, but you could tell with that page that they had clearly done their work. And for someone who hasn't read any Valiant, you sort of look at that and go, like, what's the story behind every one of these? You know, that's kind of like...
Yeah, and it makes the universe feel a little populated. Whereas usually when I think of Valiant, I'm like, they have like four characters, right?
Yeah.
So.
It's the albino guy and the space guy and the homeschooled
the,
kid.
The space guy
yeah,
is totally...
Exactly.
I'm like, okay, that guy's Iron Man. And then, like, just keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Iron Man. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. But no, I think stuff like that was really, really, I respected that a lot, to see that amount of detail. And I hope that readers that were new to this kind of looked at that and said, well, you know, I kind of want
to
learn
yeah,
more, like, what's the deal with this guy? And exactly. Exactly.
If I were going to pick, like, two characters to read off of this. So first of all, I'm
sure.
not a big team book person, which is kind of ironic because my favorite like TV and movie stuff are all the team stuff. But in books, I prefer the single character run. So I'd like, I'm like Bloodshot seems pretty cool. And Ninjak seemed pretty cool.
Yeah.
Based on this one. I don't think I'd be much into Eternal Warrior. He seems a little too dry.
Well, it's really interesting that you pick those two, because those two are the exact books that Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent moved on to after this ended.
Someone was like, you did well with these characters.
Exactly. No, it's totally, that's completely right. Matt Kent started Ninjak 2 or 3 months, I think, after this ended, and Jeff Lemire did Bloodshot Reborn, which, of course, was like the new Bloodshot that immediately followed the events of this, which I think is part of what I really, really like about Valiant, is that events have consequences. They rarely ever go back on them, and it allows them to sort of have a chance to reinvent as opposed to simply reset a character. And so
did
Bloodshot Reborn. Yeah,
did stuff go on with this new geomancer that was introduced at the end?
Oh, Tama. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think they refer to her by name.
They don't in the book, no. You just kind of see her.
Yeah, no, Tama is super important because the Eternal Warrior has to try again to protect
his solution geomancer. Isn't to keep one alive, it's just to get more.
Right, we need to bring this one from the future.
Right. And if there's only ever one at a time, doesn't that mean the future doesn't have a geomancer?
Right. Know. Well, that's the real question. I mean, he thinks that he's protecting that one, and that because he thinks he has more time to train this one. So, but that's the whole point of Book of Death, actually. Summer event for 15 is him having to protect this geomancer from this, well, I don't want to say who the bad guy is in that, because then that would be spoiling a different event, because it's actually a pretty...
So outside of this story, is his main role still just basically bodyguard for the Geomancer?
That's a really good question, because actually, much like Bloodshot Reborn did a really good job reinventing Bloodshot and sort of trying to add more personality and actually provide a depowered character for quite a while, which is super interesting. Eternal Warrior just started Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. I think we're on issue 7 or 8 at this point. And that is the whole... How do I dance around this adequately enough? So he's failed in the past. We know that much. And he can die, but he comes back. And Wrath of the Eternal Warrior surrounds that idea that he can die and he can come back. But what happens when he dies? And how does he manage to come back? Because it's not that simple. I don't want to give away any more beyond that, because again, now we're dancing around what happens in Book of Death. But
that's the one they did that big incentive where they only did it in print, right?
It was the Book of Death tie-in called Legends of the Geomancer. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was the one that was strictly in print, was never done digitally, was never done as a second printing. Was never offered up in any other fashion. It wasn't put into trades. Yes, that was their insane, insane, insane thing, of which I have the first issue.
Yeah.
It was an interesting gamble on Valiant's part, especially because literally means if you don't have it, there's no other way of actually ever reading that story. But that has a whole lot to deal with. I don't know if you remember, and again, this is just how in-depth Valiant is, when they find the new Geomancer at the end of The Valiant, she's clutching a book in her hand, and that book is The Legends of the Geomancer.
Okay.
The story that's told in that book we were just discussing. So, yeah, it just shows you the level of just craziness within all of this. Were there any things you found like problematic? What did you think about the art? I know Paola Rivera isn't for everybody, but
I thought it fit the story pretty well. I think if you had gotten more detailed than it was, it would have been harder to follow. It's definitely toned down colors from what I'm used to reading superheroes with DC and Marvel. And I liked, my favorite bits were the kind of fantasy sequences that Kay's character kind of narrates.
I was going to ask you, I'm sure you did, but did you figure out that that was actually a different artist?
Yeah, I assumed. I guess I didn't really look.
Did you know who it was? It was actually, that's Jeff Lemire's artwork.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. He's uncredited.
Who knew he could draw?
Yeah, no, I mean, he did Underwater Welder, and he did Trillium and Sweet Tooth. I'm sure you've heard us mention Sweet Tooth.
I guess I just assumed that his credit on those things were for writing. I didn't realize he drew them. That is very cool.
Yeah, it's a different style.
Yeah, for
it's
sure. It worked really his style well is as definitely, a fantasy sequence stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought that it's really neat, and I instantly identified it when I read it because I've obviously read some of his other stuff, but it's interesting because he's actually not credited. Like within the book, there's no formal credit for his artistic contributions. I really like that story within a story thing. Did you find that sort of tiring that they continued with it, or did you like that?
I found that the most engaging part.
Okay,
honestly, there were parts that felt kind of slow to me, or not even like action-wise, there's a lot going on, but if it's action you don't really care about or aren't emotionally invested in, then it still feels slow. And so the stuff with Kay felt the most relevant, really, in her inner struggles, and then it, of course, doesn't work out so well for her. But I really wanted her, sooner than she did, to come into realizing that she didn't need her freaking white knight. And then, of course, I didn't want her to actually have needed him all along because it didn't work out when she tried to fight, but whatever.
So. Right. Yeah, no, I think probably the interactions between Bloodshot and Kay were my favorite parts. Mm-hmm. I think those were the best. I love, God, like the two panels that absolutely kill me in this book are the ones where it's that small sequence where she's like crying in the dark and like the only thing illuminating the panels are his eyes.
Yeah.
And so his like eyes are glowing and you can see the tears coming down her face.
Something's not human about you. No shit.
Yeah. Are you a robot? Nope, not a robot. Are you a cyborg? Nope, not a cyborg. Yeah. What's your name? Bloodshot. Bloodshot, what kind of name is that? Mine. Kicks in the door. I love that sequence. Yep. The dialogue there is just fantastic. And I think it really succeeds at getting people interested in the whole Bloodshot scenario, because as much as you sort of said it, and I'll echo it, I'm not crazy about the idea that they kill off Kay really just to further Bloodshot storyline.
Yep.
Even more, I'm kind of morbidly concerned that, like, you know, Kay, you have to have boundaries, girl. Like, you can't just go removing, you know, the nanites from someone's blood. Like, she didn't ask. He did not sign any forms. There were no permission slips about that. It
could have been what was keeping this him guy alive. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know.
She basically sends him on his way as a normal mortal human, and it succeeded for me.
In the midst of this battle.
Yeah. Better get away from here, because, like, you don't have, like, any actual regenerative abilities now.
You are welcome.
Yeah, don't thank me now.
This is why we're letting you die.
But, and that panel too, that panel where she's like, you know, dying and she's like removing, and you can see all the energy in the air as she's like using her powers to pull the nanites out of him. And like that panel sticks with me like time and time again too. Mm-hmm. So in the end, like, did it succeed for you? Did you find this approachable? Like, you said that there were other books you were thinking you were, you know, considering,
yeah,
you know, following after this.
Especially based on, I had just read the Free Comic Book Day Valiant, you know, sampler kind of thing, whatever they call it. And it had a Bloodshot Island, like, sequence in there that I liked. And then this, he was a kind of cool character. I mean, I've always liked the Wolverine type character, the gruff and super hard to hurt.
Right, yeah.
that is an archetype I enjoy stories with. So that seems like something to pursue in the future. And the, like I was saying, the ninja character seemed kind of cool. Again, the smarty pants tech wizards are a personal fave.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
We'll see about this ninja stuff. Usually ninja stuff is not my thing, but we'll see.
It's really weird. Like, they show, like, that his nightmares involve, like, his mom being some sort of, like, geisha-esque depiction.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even make any sense because his mom is actually British.
What?
Or what we know in Ninjak is that his mom is British. And so maybe they've actually peppered things in this book we haven't even reached in Ninjak yet.
Huh.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
That she's some sort of Japanese demon all along.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing, the other thing I would add for our listeners is that if you've read this book or you're interested in Bloodshot, you can either go read the original Bloodshot or you can read Bloodshot Reborn. And if you're more interested in what you get in this book, I would definitely recommend that you go with Reborn. Reborn will actually give you the whole story anyway, and you can sort of skip over the older stuff. Because the old Bloodshot is more of a two-dimensional action hero, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, if that's what you're into. Exactly. You know me, Nick. Exactly. That's not me.
Yeah.
The other thing to throw out there for if you're interested in the particular book we've been talking about, The Valiant, it is dirt cheap. It is like $10, correct, for like 140 pages. You get four issues, but they're big, and then there's a ton of back material. And the other thing, and the way I did it is old enough now that you can get it from your local library.
Yeah, it's super affordable. The back matter is great. It's available in a lot of different ways. If you buy the trade on Comixology, I think you effectively get one issue free over buying it mm-hmm. single issues. It's a great entry point. It's really affordable. And if you've listened to most of this podcast up to this point, you might not have as many reasons to go buy it. But hopefully we've encouraged you just as much as we've spoiled the book. Yep. So I think we've probably hit an effective middle ground. So with that in mind, we'd like to thank you all for listening to this podcast about The Valiant by Valiant, written by Matt Kint and Jeff Lemire, drawn by Paolo Rivera. We'd encourage you to go pick up the book in whatever format you deem most price effective or convenient. And we'd love to hear from you about your thoughts about The Valiant. Did you think it was a good entry point? Did you not? Were there characters that resonated with you? Were there those that you just didn't give a shit about altogether? So send us your emails or your handwritten mail, even though I don't think we've given a way to do that. But we encourage it. And we look forward to talking with you next week.
The Valiant. By Valiant. Written by Valiant. Yeah. Drawn by Valiant.
You're written by Valiant. Yeah, exactly.
In part with Valiant.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. This episode was produced by Nick White and Kate Scotchless. Our producer is Mike Rappin, and the show is edited by Xander Riggs. The music in this episode is brought to you by Infinity Shred. You can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.com. Remember, if you enjoy this show, tell someone about it, rate us online, or write to us. Until we return on July 20th, our minisodes will be full of conversations about the series we've been most excited about. Let us know what you're planning on reading this summer, or what you've been reading. Send us email at ircb@destroythesybe.org. If our minisodes aren't enough, you can check out the backlog of episodes on our website, ircb.us, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the entire podcast team on Twitter, and you can follow the show at ircbpodcast. And don't forget, you can join and spark conversations over on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Until next time, from all of us here at the podcast, thanks for listening.